Welcome everybody to what I think is certainly the most interesting session of Concurrent 6. You could be talking about IFRS 4 or stress testing. You've all chosen to come to be entrepreneurial, so clearly this is the session for actuaries with personality. Today in Kevin Lynn we have a speaker who walks the talk, having built his own business far, far removed from the traditional shores of actuarial practice. And if you've read Kevin's paper, you'll see he has shared generously not just the wins but some very painful mistakes and what he has learnt from that, and I commend the paper to you. Today he hopes to challenge our thinking about the traditional, if you like, actuarial career path, about the way we develop professionally and personally, about how we can expand our relevance, our influence, our brand to the customers that we typically deal with, of course, but also expanding that to industries and customers that we don't typically deal with, and the community at large. Sounds good, doesn't it? So would you please join me in welcoming Kevin? He's been working for a leading Australian life insurer for the last 10 years. I should give his bio, shouldn't I? Holding a number of diverse technical and managerial roles across pricing and financial reporting. He began his career in the reinsurance industry in Australia, and after he got his fellowship, he moved overseas to expand his experience there. And then he further broadened it by applying his training and his actuarial experience to several non-traditional ventures, including property development, setting up a childcare business, and advising a producer and supplier of medical products. So please welcome Kevin.
Hello. Thanks, Kent. Now, hi everyone, I'm very excited to be here. Now, I'd like to start us off with a quick survey. So we've got a decent sample size here, and if I can ask everyone to participate, please. So can we all please stand up? Okay, my first question is, please stay standing if you have thought about starting a business. So if you have ever thought about starting a business, please stay standing, otherwise please be seated. Oh, that's most of us. I'd say a good 95%. Okay, well, the next question to those still standing is, if you've actually started the business, please remain standing. Otherwise, please be seated. We're probably down to about 10%. Okay, and the final question to those still standing is, if you used actuarial techniques in your business, please remain standing. Otherwise, please be seated. Fantastic. We've got a good handful of us, probably half a dozen or so. Look, I'd encourage you to share your experiences with everyone someday so that we can all collectively learn from your experience. So thanks for participating in the survey. Please be seated. So, look, I decided to write a paper and presentation to share my experience in developing a childcare business. Now, I found actuarial expertise to be very useful in setting up the business, and in return, I found that the entrepreneurial experience helped make me into a better actuary. So it got me thinking, did other actuaries have a similar experience? And I went out and I had a chat with a few of us, and I noticed that there was a key theme. We all agreed that actuaries had a lot to gain from the entrepreneurial experience. So let me bring you through my journey today. Now, this is the site where we built our childcare centre. I took this photo not long after we purchased the property. So on the left, behind the hedges, it's a house. And on the right is a tennis court. And as I was taking this photo, behind me is a primary school. And down the road to the right, it's a major shopping center and a new train station's being built there now. So we're going to be seeing a lot of cute photos to keep with the childcare theme today. Now, I love this photo. It tells me to think outside the box. Now, the idea to build a childcare business came from my father. Right? He saw in the family a lot of the skills required to make the idea work. And so he challenged me to use my actuarial skills beyond my career and help the family start this business. So in hindsight, my father created an entrepreneurial culture within the family, and certainly we would have been much less likely to start a business without his encouragement. And so it got me thinking, childcare business. Yeah, it had a lot going for it. It had government support. It had a growing population. And it had a cultural shift towards working parents. So how did I apply actuarial techniques? Well, I'm not going to go into the technical detail today, but what I wanted to do was to highlight the key areas where actuarial techniques were used. So the idea was to start a childcare business, and I found actuarial techniques to be useful to optimize that idea. So one of the things we had to optimize was location. And there were a few key variables. You had childcare fees, which varied from suburb to suburb. You had property prices, which varied greatly from suburb to suburb. And you also had demand, which varied from suburb to suburb. So I went and I gathered some data. So some data I got online. I went to get childcare regulations. And I also got development control plans. And other data, I went to consult experts. So I consulted an architect, and he gave me details on construction costs and also site selection. I also went to chat with real estate agents who gave me details on property prices. I also surveyed childcare centers. And one of them was very helpful. They even gave me a detailed breakdown on their operating expenses and their capital expenses. Now, of course, not all childcares were so forthcoming in providing their data. And indeed, at times I had to go undercover with my little niece. And so we got details on their childcare fees and their vacancies. So with all this data, I created a model. And that model showed that the childcare center needs at least 56 places to have the scale to meet our profitability criteria. Another thing that the model showed was the areas where childcare fees provided the greatest return when compared to property prices. And so in these areas, I did further studies. So I did demographic studies on these areas. In addition to ABS statistics, I also contacted the local councils, went on their websites, and I got details on their residential development applications and approvals. So with this information, I was able to project the future households in the area. And with that, I compared it with the existing childcare services in the area, and I worked out if a new childcare center was required. So by now we had narrowed down our search area down to a few specific suburbs. And look, we were prepared to wait until the right property came around rather than jump into something that wasn't optimal. This is because our business idea was very capital intensive. And we really only had one shot to make it work. And this was to prove crucial in the events to come. Now, I also found useful the actuarial focus on solvency and capital requirements. So with the model, I used it to develop a business plan and went to the bank and I got a loan. And I also found actuarial expertise useful to help execute the idea. So I used actuarial techniques to do the pricing and risk management. But I also found that the control cycle was very useful. So when things didn't go according to expected, I used the control cycle to work out what was going wrong and adjust our approach. So what happened? Well, even though we planned very carefully, it was an 8-year struggle, but we finally made it across the line. Looking back at the experience, I see a series of mistakes, a series of learnings, and adjusting our approach to make this business work. And therein I found out what was the core of the entrepreneurial experience. It was, you know, bruised and battered. It's all about finding solutions to these setbacks. And so let me bring you through the key events. So, look, to help execute our idea, we needed to consult with a lot of experts. So we had architects, we had engineers, we had lawyers, we had real estate agents, we had certifiers, we had builders, project managers. Now, the architect that we decided to go with, they drew beautiful designs, but they had no experience in childcare. So while they drew us a gorgeous building, it was over-designed. They drew us walk-in fridges. We had commercial-grade kitchens. We had automatic doors. And we had these really funky lights that shot the beam up to the ceiling and reflected it back down to the ground. So when we went to builders for tender, the cheapest quote came in at double our construction budget that we told the architect. So in that, we learnt our first lesson. We learnt that experience is a commodity. It can be bought. And it's much cheaper in terms of time and money than hiring inexperienced. So with that lesson in mind, we went to look for an experienced builder. Now, we were referred to this builder who, they actually developed childcare centres and they ran childcare centres as well. And we did a due diligence on them and we visited a couple of their centres and we thought, oh, wow, fantastic, these guys are ideal. So they were a small operation, so that they had a builder, they had a draftsman, they had engineers, and they also had a relationship with their certifier. So what they said was, we will simplify the building design for you so that it will meet your construction budget, which they did very well. But they said, look, to make the construction process smoother, you let go of your inexperienced architect. We'll look after this. And so, look, more than 2 years later, that builder went into liquidation and left us with an incomplete and, you know, building with a lot of mistakes in it. And in hindsight, we were exposed to a lot of risks that we didn't fully appreciate at the time. Firstly, there was a conflict of interest risk. There was a clear conflict of interest risk with having a related party certify the builder's work. Another thing was that we didn't have the expertise to go and review the builder's work. And we'd already let go of our architect. And then there were contract ambiguities, which meant that it wasn't very clear what we could do when things started to go wrong. So it actually took us quite a while before we could even terminate the contract. And finally, we didn't have insurance when things went wrong. You know, as an actuary. Oops. Yeah, I really dropped the ball on that one. And so poor risk management was our biggest mistake. And a part of me wonders if things would have been different had I done that ERM course. Yeah. So let me bring you through the site the day that we took it over from the builder. Now, this is the front of the building. And you'll notice there's like a big mound of weeds at the front. The roof is incomplete and leaking. There's just discarded materials everywhere. And you'll notice that there's a stormwater detention tank that remains uncovered. You know, so someone could easily fall in there and hurt themselves. So what we did was we boarded everything up. We fenced the area off. We got insurance, just in case anyone hurt themselves. And we took some time off. Now, how much did this mistake cost us? Well, in terms of time, it cost us more than 3 years. And money-wise, it cost us a lot of money. But in my view, the biggest cost was opportunity cost. Because we had lost the golden window where we could have gone in and built another center in that area. Because indeed, you know, a couple of years after I took this video, we noticed childcare centers building around us. Now, I love this series of photographs because persistence to me means it's like a child learning how to put on her shoes. Okay, we got a building consultant on site to tell us what was wrong with the building. And his comment to us was that this is incompetence on a grand scale. And he said that, and he recommended that even though the builder has gone into liquidation, he still recommended that we take legal action to sue the builder for his personal assets. Now, we had learned the lesson of opportunity costs already. And we realized, look, we only had this a certain amount of capital. We could either finish building the center or we could take legal action and who knows what would happen. And so we thought it was best to focus on the business and finish that. And although we felt very aggrieved, we thought, okay, let's just write it off as a very expensive learning lesson and make sure that we don't do the same mistake again. So after taking more than a year off, we came back to the project and we realized we had quite a few offers on the table from other childcare operators and developers. So they were very tempting offers, but we decided to pull out our model and use the control cycle. So we updated the assumptions and we realized that the project was still very much feasible because a few things have gone our way. Firstly, interest rates have halved. Another one was that childcare fees have doubled. And the population in the area grew as we projected. But the overwhelming factor that convinced us that our project was still feasible was the fact that we had gotten in there first and we had secured the best location, even compared to our competitors. I mean, we were just across the road from the primary school and we were down the road from the shopping center and there was a new train station being built there. So at this crucial moment, actuarial techniques helped us to decide to continue with the project rather than take up these tempting offers. And, you know, learning from our mistakes, we got it right in the second time with no major issues. So we finished building, and that led me to reflect on what the entrepreneurial experience is about. You know, there will be setbacks. It doesn't matter how carefully you plan, there will be setbacks. And the key is to learn from the experiences and adjust your approach to make the business work. And ultimately, resilience is all about getting that right perspective. Now, strength in diversity. So our family had quite diverse skills. So at different phases of the project, a different family member would take the lead role. For me, I took the lead role in the development phase, and in the operational phase, my role has changed. So because it was never my intention to go and work in the childcare. Indeed, we've got people who are better positioned to do so, and the more hands-on I get, the more I'll get in their way. So we had a family member who had the experience and qualifications to be the director. We had another family member who's a chartered accountant, and he's the financial controller. Another family member had experience in advertising, and so he does the websites, Facebook, flyers and marketing material. Now, for me, from a technical actuarial perspective, I contribute much less. I mean, I do the pricing. I make sure our insurances are up to date. But you see, my role has changed. Now I see myself more as an enabler. So I maintain a close relationship with the family. I maintain a cohesive team. I stay passionate. And I make sure that the team has the necessary tools to do their work. And I also make myself available to act as a sounding board. Okay? So reflecting upon this, I realized that business partners are a key source of strength, especially ones with diversified skill sets. And so to anyone out there who's, I mean, I know there's quite a few of you who've thought about starting a business but haven't started yet, I guess what I'd recommend is for you to really seriously consider getting a business partner on board. So how are we doing today? Well, you know, we've been open for a year now, and there's been ups and downs, but we are cash flow positive, and it looks like we're going to be okay. Now, I'd like to bring you through a quick tour of our center. So this is the front. Now, you'll notice that that mound of weeds, that was there. We buried that under the car park. And the building itself, it's inspired by Lego. So we've got blocks of, you know, different size and shapes and different colors. And so, did I mention I'm also the gardener? And now, you can't see the garden there, but it's just out front. And we've got the best garden on the street. So this is the preschooler's room. So what we wanted was to make the unique building design a competitive advantage. So as soon as the parents step foot in the center, we wanted them to be impressed. This is the baby's room. So this is for children 0 to 2 years old. And this is the cot room where they sleep. And this is the playground where, you know, we've got different shapes and colors to stimulate growing minds. So how did the entrepreneurial experience make me into a better actuary? Well, I went out and had a chat with a few of us, actuaries who have entrepreneurial experience, and we all agreed that the entrepreneurial experience gives the actuary accelerated opportunities to develop. And there were a few key themes that I wanted to highlight. So firstly, we thought that the entrepreneurial experience made the actuary better at finding practical solutions to make the business idea work. The entrepreneurial experience encourages the actuary to think innovatively and apply actuarial techniques beyond business as usual. And we also thought that the entrepreneurial experience teaches the actuary to take calculated risks. The entrepreneurial experience also teaches resilience because, you know, starting a business, a lot of decisions have to be made and mistakes will be made. It doesn't matter how carefully you plan things, there will be setbacks. And the key is to learn from those mistakes and adjust your approach to make the business idea work. Now, that's no different to an actuarial career because you may get setbacks in your career. You may fail exams. You may be overlooked for a role. You may be made redundant. But the key is to regroup, stay focused, learn from the experience, and adjust your approach to move forwards. Okay, so be persistent, adapt, and keep moving. Another thing that I thought the entrepreneurial experience teaches is leadership. Because it teaches you what the strengths and limitations of actuarial techniques are. And indeed, you have to go to consult other experts who are better positioned to provide the advice than actuaries are. And this teaches you how to be an enabler, to enable them to provide you with such advice. And indeed, for me in my career, it's made me into a more effective team leader and manager, and it's prepared me well to manage more senior staff. Another thing that the entrepreneurial experience requires is that you work with professionals of different backgrounds. So to communicate with them, it's more effective to communicate in simpler terms and in non-technical language. And you realize that what they want to know, what they care about, is what you have to recommend rather than how you came to that recommendation. So, you know, we had quite a few people here who were thinking about starting a business. So what would I recommend? How would I recommend you approach entrepreneurialism if you wanted to get the experience? Well, I like this picture as well. This is one of my favorites. It's kids starting a lemonade stall. You know, start small, start early. Now, what I learned about entrepreneurs is that they combine three key elements to start a business. That being an idea, capital, and expertise to execute. But crucially, none of these elements have to belong to the entrepreneur. Indeed, I learned a new word in doing this presentation, the intrapreneur. It's simply somebody who works in an entrepreneurial capacity for their employer. So that's one thing I'd recommend to people who want the experience is to consider intrapreneurialism. Okay, and here I would like to clarify that an intrapreneur is different from a business manager who is somebody who runs the business. But what would I recommend for somebody who really wants to start a business to go out and do something completely new? Well, what I'd recommend is this, that you leverage upon your actuarial expertise as a competitive advantage, and you combine that with entrepreneurial instinct. So on one hand, you don't want to overanalyze things, but on the other hand, you also don't want to make, you know, rash decisions based on gut instinct that proved to be fatal. The balance, there's a balance there, and it lies somewhere in between, and it would vary from opportunity to opportunity. And part of me recommends, part of me wonders if our first builder could have used some actuarial advice. Another thing I'd recommend is to get business partners. So ideally it's a business manager who has expertise in that field and someone whose skills complements your own. And finally, I'd recommend limiting any potential conflict of interest with your actuarial career. Now, unless your business idea is to go start an insurance company, usually that conflict of interest is usually in terms of time and availability. Now, I wanted to compare my approach to entrepreneurialism with entrepreneurs of different backgrounds. So I had a chat with a few of them and I realized that they used a lot of entrepreneurial instinct and very little of the analysis. Now, indeed, one IT entrepreneur I interviewed, he's got a very interesting business. So he does e-commerce platforms to which other businesses would subscribe to. So he said to me, "Kevin, I don't do any numbers. I don't even do business plans. I do action plans." So what he does is that he would make the product, he will develop the product first, and then he would go and look for customers. And he would adjust his products according to the customer feedback. Now, they call this type of approach the ready, fire, aim approach, where it works well in a fast developing industry where there's relatively low capital requirements. So, if you can imagine a very fast moving object and the entrepreneur just shoots, bang, bang, bang. And then he watches where the bullets fly and then he adjusts his aim accordingly and bang, bang, bang. You see, that approach wouldn't have worked for our childcare business, simply because the capital requirements meant that we only had one bullet. And so we had to aim very carefully before we fired, and we had to make sure that we hit the target. Now, another interesting approach to entrepreneurialism is charities and pro bono work. I was at an earlier session today, I think it was called The Causeway, and they discussed about applying actuarial techniques, like technical actuarial techniques, to charities and in a pro bono capacity. So I think actuaries have a lot to gain from that experience. And certainly if anyone is interested in donating their time, I'd recommend that you contact Hayden Bernal over lunch. So, look, this conference is about reimagining the future. So I would like to leave you with some visions today. Firstly, for members, I say imagine actuaries working in all industries. Imagine all industries are considered traditional. And I say, imagine that there were courses to teach about the actuarial way of doing business. For the Institute of Actuaries, I say, imagine the higher profile, the enhanced reputation across all industries. Imagine having a culture of innovation, and imagine having the infrastructure to encourage and support actuaries to move into non-traditional fields. For employers of actuaries, I say, imagine the competitive advantage and innovation. You have with a team of actuary intrapreneurs. And imagine those actuaries adding value to all areas of your business. Okay, well, that's my presentation. I'd like to open this discussion to the floor.
Thank you. I think we should thank Kevin for that presentation. Although I would say, I mean, you weren't perhaps selling pizzas and cleaning houses like Alyssa yesterday said, but I bet you she had her insurance sorted out. I think we all know the way things go now. Please come up to the microphone with your questions and state your name first. I'll kick off though, Kevin. So most people who are going out to start a business, an accountant would be a key advisor and a typical go-to person very early on, I would imagine. You mentioned you had an accountant in the family. Why wasn't he the go-to person in your venture, and how come you came to be in that position of really leading things in that very early development phase?
That's a good question, Kent. Now, I'm not an accountant myself, so I don't want to speak for all accountants, but I did have a chat with my brother, who's a chartered accountant, and I asked him to compare the approach that I used against the approach that he would have used, because he commented that it was quite peculiar in the way that I did things. He said that he would have just taken the financials from a childcare centre in the area, and he would have based a lot of his decision making on that. He found it quite interesting how, as an actuary, how I went to look for sort of data that he would have thought is not as related to be able to project into the future with statistical methods. And he also found it quite reassuring that we use the control cycle to update the model and revise things as experience comes in. And so that's how we agreed to continue with the project at a time when we had very tempting offers to take the property off us. But certainly I don't see actuaries as having a monopoly on any of these things. Certainly, you know, maybe an analyst or a statistician would have been able to do something similar.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, for this informative and very encouraging talk. I'm amazed at the very good team that you have for your business enterprise, a well-needed family team. But my question is different because you give us a good case of this a personal case study. So I'm also going to ask you a personal question. So the purpose, as all shareholders, we would like to know the return on the capital that you invested in, not only in terms of hard cash, but more importantly, the soft aspect, the fulfillment, your satisfactions, and
yep.
The experiences that you learn.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair question, Ms. Ong. In our initial business case, we actually targeted a 25% return on capital. But as so when we revised things to decide if the project was still feasible, we targeted about 20, so that because we realized that the economic environment has changed a lot. We were helped by quite a few things. As I said, the interest rates had gone down significantly, and they continue to go down. And the other thing was that childcare fees had doubled. So, and we were quite sure that the demand would still be there. Even around the area at this stage, we've got high-rise developments going on. I think you also asked about how much we invested. So I think just the capital itself that we contributed, I think it was a couple million. It was at least a couple million. Yeah.
Hi Kevin, Julia Lessing from Guardian Actuarial. I myself are 12 months into having my own business, and I can absolutely echo everything that you've said about the application of actuarial skills to running a business in terms of pricing, capital management, cash flow management, risk management, control cycle. But of course I'm much earlier in my journey, and I was reflecting on how you said, I think it was an 8-year journey from start to finish for your childcare centre, which was similar to Elisa's description of her 8-year journey yesterday, from, you know, deciding to go to the Olympics to actually getting there. And so I was wondering, along the way of that fairly lengthy journey, you know, it often takes most of us that long to actually get qualified as an actuary. What was your why along the way? What was your why? What kept you going along the way so that you could sort of see it out to, from start to finish?
That's a great question, Julia. Thanks for asking it. Look, there were several personal reasons for me to get into this, and it helped to push me through. And the primary one was we wanted to keep the family together. We wanted, as we were growing up, we didn't want to go our separate ways. We wanted to basically have a lot to do with each other. And happily, it worked out very well. At times of adversity, the family pulled very close together rather than fragment. And we all worked towards that common goal. We wanted to have a breadbasket for the family that we can rely upon, you know, in cases in the future. And so there's a very strong underlying family theme to our motivation.
There's quite a few of you. Oh, okay, Francis, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Just a quick question. I remember coming back to a school reunion and meeting everyone, seeing how they were doing, sort of 10 years on, and all the people I thought were going to do really well had, you know, were successful professionals and were doing well, but they were safe. And a couple of people who I thought had done fantastically well, I was like, oh, I wish you'd done that. They'd taken the risks and weren't the sort of people I thought were going to succeed when we're in school together. So my question is that whilst actuaries might have the required skill set to do the control cycle and do those sort of things, I guess our biggest lodestone is the fact that we've got that safe alternative of a very valuable actuarial career that pays very well and pays the mortgage every month over 8 years. So what would your advice be to us stuck in our comfort zone to get out of a comfort zone and do something more entrepreneurial?
Thanks for the question, Francis. It's a great question. What my vision is for the profession, you see, I'm thinking, number one, for us collectively as a group, I'm thinking entrepreneurialism is a great way for us to expand and grow. So that's a motivation from a collective view. From a personal view, I'd say that the entrepreneurial experience helps make you into an even better actuary. So even if you were focused, hell-bent on your career, I feel that starting a business is more like having a practical MBA under your belt. I feel that is just as valuable, and it gives you real-life experiences that you wouldn't otherwise have gained in your career, at least until a very relatively senior position. And lastly, I'd say, you know, and I talk about this in my paper, where I found that there was inertia in the family as well in doing this business. The inertia in particular, it's a reluctance to move outside the area that we lived in, because we had lived there for a very long time, but we but from a childcare business perspective, it wasn't, it was still doable, but it wasn't as good as other areas. And even that sort of rational type of an argument, I couldn't persuade the family to move. I needed to appeal to the soul. Like, I really appealed to the heart with an argument based on a better lifestyle, something where they had schools for their children and better access to work. So I think to encourage actuaries to go out of that comfort zone, I would say, number one, think of professional development. Number two, think of a vision that would inspire you to move.
I mean, once, when I was in my late teens, just following on from that in Francis's question, I heard a talk about a survey that had been done of 100 people aged 100. And what are the three, or what are the key things that they would give as advice from their lives? And the three themes that came out were if they had their life to live over again. And the three themes that came out were they would risk more, they would reflect more, and they'd do more things that people would remember them by. And for whatever reason, that's really stuck with me. But the punchline was if you can't learn from 10,000 years of experience, then you really can't learn at all. So it's very good. We've probably got time for one more. Perhaps someone who, from that very beginning of the session, who stood up and said, yeah, we've started a business. It'd be great to hear from, we've heard from Julia. Is someone else willing to share from their experience?
Yeah, Mark Hancock. I had a bit of a career block when I was about 39, and I decided to change and try and be a bit entrepreneurial, but I was lucky. I had a former boss who was starting his own small business, and he sort of put me under him, and I built up a sort of consulting business, not exactly actuarial, but quasi-actuarial, and I did that for about 9 years till it got to be quite successful, and I was able to... He fortunately let me take it with me and start from scratch, but I basically had a revenue base to start off with. Some of the things you said I thought were really valid was about leveraging off your actuarial skills, and I think you can actually do it in a number of creative ways that you wouldn't always think of. So I consult to fund managers on the value of insurance companies, a bit like Sid was talking about earlier. I compete with Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch and JP Morgan, but can do it pretty much by myself with the actuarial training. And I think a couple of lessons I learnt years ago at PTOW, which became TBF&C and so on, the actuaries used to say, well, clients can't always understand how good your work is. It's too technical and you need to communicate. But one thing they can tell is if it's really clean document with absolutely no typos and all the tables add up perfectly but it's also delivered on time and when you say it's going to be ready. And I've always done that from that early training. And one other thing I learnt from Macquarie Bank is Macquarie don't typically go and start a whole new, completely different business in a different space. They tend to do it incrementally. So if they've got a successful warrants business in Hong Kong, they might introduce warrants business in Singapore in a different geography. Or if they're in Hong Kong in warrants, they might start doing derivatives or fixed interest or something like that. So they just sort of leverage off and build the building block. I'm not an advertisement for Macquarie Bank, but they must be in something like, you know, every major economy around the world, and more than half their staff are overseas, which wasn't true sort of before the GFC. So that's probably enough from me.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. I think we should give Kevin another